Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
What would you pay for and how much would you pay for that service?
Today on episode 433 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with Teresa Fetti, president of Provident Trust Group. I'm going to ask Teresa what entrepreneurs miss when they are trying to determine where the best opportunity might be for recurring revenue, how to strategize, plan, and implement the best recurring revenue to achieve your business and personal goals, and much more. You can read a description of our discussion, information about Teresa, including links and resources we mentioned in this episode, on our website at smashingtheplateau.com. Email me and let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Now let's welcome Teresa Fetti. Teresa is a strong and effective leader with a background in building relationships amongst fellow executives and delivering on customer commitments. Teresa grew the largest independent trust company in Nevada from $300 million in assets under custody to more than $4.5 billion. She's known as a leader that utilizes company culture to drive performance and success. Teresa, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you on again.
Thanks for having me.
Teresa, I know from your previous visits with us on Smashing the Plateau that you have a long and storied career building businesses and also advising others as they build businesses. One of the biggest pain points that I hear from entrepreneurs is the struggle to build consistent and stable revenue, no matter what kind of business they're in or what their expenses are. That stability in revenue and diversifying streams of revenue seems to be a recurring theme among entrepreneurs. What's been your experience trying to chase that elusive recurring revenue?
Well, definitely. I think when you're starting to build your business, it's sometimes difficult to even identify where you want the recurring revenue to even be. So I know that now, looking back on the last 10 years, and as I consult with startups and people starting to build their businesses, new entrepreneurs, a lot of them have ideas of where they want the recurring revenue to come from, but they don't seem to do the math sometimes to figure out, one, if that's a viable business model. Do people even want that? Are they going to pay the same amount of money per month, per year, whatever it is, for that service? Do they find value in it? And two, is that even something that's sustainable? And I find that quite a few of the entrepreneurs really just haven't sat down and done the business plan and done the math.
So in your case, in businesses that you have built, what are some examples of how it has worked out for you and how you've actually pursued recurring revenue and succeeded?
So Provident is built on an annual fee model, and that worked out. Obviously, in the very beginning years, even with the annual fee model, you have to go out and you have to work really hard at getting the groups and or clients on there to have the recurring revenue from several sources. So that was, I'd probably say the first 3 to 5 years was very difficult, and you're constantly hunting. Like in the law firm business, you don't have a lot of recurring revenue. And when I was a tax attorney, you're constantly hunting for the next client who needs an estate plan or needs a business plan or whatever you're doing for them, contract planning, et cetera. You're constantly hunting for new work. And that's what I knew I didn't want to do anymore when I got involved with Provident. And kind of what attracted us to the business was the annual recurring revenue. However, everybody thinks that just because it's reoccurring, it means it's easy. And it's not. You put a lot of time and effort, one, trying to find the right clients that are willing to pay the reoccurring revenue. And then two, trying to diversify out, because you lose a revenue source. Obviously, you could lose quite a bit of your reoccurring revenue if you don't provide value, not only to the people who are referring you business, but value to your clients. Nobody's going to continue to pay for something that they don't find value in.
So what do you mean the right clients to pay reoccurring revenue?
So ours was an annual, they needed us in the retirement world. You have to have a custodian. So you're going to pay somebody. And we're a little bit of even a commodity. You've tried to set yourself apart as the best in customer service or the best in breed and technology or et cetera. You try to do all of those things where clients find value. But in the very beginning parts of my business, I was trying to get referrals from people that made sense. And it's interesting when I look back at the first few years versus what we do now. We grew up, obviously, over that decade-long period of growing our business. Our clients became a lot more, because you could be a little bit more picky about who you even took the reoccurring business from, because there are clients that you probably don't want on your system. Ones that are, in my world, it's people who are buying assets that are a lot more volatile, or even dealing with people who alternative assets aren't as transparent as traditional assets. So you don't want to even deal with investment providers that, you know, haven't kind of been through the ringer and are doing institutional type work. So, you know, I can look back at the last 10 years and I can even see where we grew up at the type of business now that we would accept for the recurring revenue, because revenue isn't revenue for revenue's sake. You want to have good, solid revenue and not buy yourself lawsuits or other things along the way as well.
Right. So you got to be really clear on who your ideal client is.
Yes.
And also, what is it that they need on an ongoing basis and they're willing to pay for on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, you have to, and you have to reinvent yourself several times during that period too. Just because you're providing value in 2010 doesn't mean that the client still sees the same amount of value in 2018. So, you know, I feel like Provident, we've done a really good job of reinventing ourselves and providing value through technology or customer service or rethinking the way that the client is serviced in this world in order to, that the client feels that the $395 a year that they pay, that there's real value to that.
How do you know when it's time to make a pivot, do some of that reinvention?
So clients are probably if you're really paying attention to them. So your referral sources and your clients will tell you when it's time to pivot. Whether it's receiving complaints or whether you have very active agents or referral groups or clients, which I believe that Provident had. We had very loyal clients and groups who would refer us business, who would actually talk to us about what they would like to see in the next year, the next 2 years. Probably that's because it was our style to constantly have conversations with them about what it looks like, what they need, what they see value in. And when we built our system, we continued to build it for people that did business with us. And I think that's why we've been successful. I've worked with companies before that have built completely new programs and never asked their largest clients, what do you want us to build? What would you find value in? What do you wish that we could do that we don't do? And I've worked with companies that have done technology development over 3, 4, 5 years and never even asked their largest clients what they think.
Right. So what I'm hearing from you, Teresa, is that it's really important to actively ask your clients and your referral sources, particularly your best clients and your best referral sources, what they want to see from you and what they want you to offer them.
Yeah.
Which sounds pretty basic, but I know a lot of people just don't do it.
Yes, I think the outreach, it's a lot of work to pay attention to what your clients are doing. But nowadays, we have all kinds of systems to do that. You know, either you have people calling on the phone or you have account managers or now, you know, you have electronic means where you send surveys or customer service type things where people get to provide feedback. I think that's the awesome thing about 2018 is the feedback loop. You can get it in 25 different ways now. Just, are you paying attention? And I have a lot of friends and entrepreneurial, you know, people I mentor that they're being told exactly what to do. They're just not paying attention.
Interesting. Do you think that business owners should actively pursue multiple methods of getting feedback from customers?
Yes. Just like I think that they should have many ways of getting feedback, because just like your employees, you have some employees who want to talk to you. You have some employees who write page long emails about feedback about the company. You have employees who interact in groups really well. You have employees, you know, the employees do the same thing that your clients do. They all provide feedback in a lot of different ways. And if you really want a whole 360 degree feedback, you need to ask for it in several different ways. Same thing I believe in revenue is if you're just starting out, you've got to ask and find value in a lot of different ways. And in the very beginning, what I see entrepreneurs do and fail with is that they don't realize you can't just try one thing most of the time unless you just got that idea that is just super amazing. I mean, some people have that beauty about their personality and then come up with the one thing that everybody wants, like Steve Jobs, right? He knew what people wanted and he made them want it. But most of us can't do that or are not wired that way. And I feel like entrepreneurs don't test the ground enough. They need to look at lots of different revenue sources in the very beginning and then do the analysis and the math on it over a 6 month or year period in time. And then look back and say, you know what? This worked for us. I'm going to pick these three lines of revenue and get rid of these three because they didn't work. And I see a lot of people kind of go down one path and they don't diversify enough to try some things just, you know, to ensure that failure doesn't occur.
So what are some ideas of different kinds of revenue that entrepreneurs can try?
So I know that you've been looking down reoccurring revenue with your podcast. And when I think about reoccurring revenue, I think about a subscription-based model sort of, and whether people are willing to pay for that monthly, quarterly, annually. That's one way to do it, right? But I also think there's a way to augment that subscription-based revenue. A lot of people do it through additional consulting, or you got to look at how your business actually makes money and what people are willing to pay for. What I see sometimes is that they go after the reoccurring revenue so hard that they forget about the one-time revenue that is just automatic. And that's still where clients are willing to pay a one-time fee for some service. And maybe it's a bigger pop than the reoccurring revenue, but they gloss over it because they're just after the reoccurring revenue, but that's the easy revenue. Right. So
right.
I just find that oftentimes entrepreneurs haven't really sat down and thought about all the ways they could make money and really looked at, okay, these are all the ways I can make money. There's 10 ways, but these are the two or three best ways that I can do it and be successful at it, and then pursue two or three, because most of the time their first one that they thought was going to be the moneymaker often is not.
Mm. Teresa, are there particular questions entrepreneurs can ask themselves to try to uncover as many potential types of revenue as possible?
So one of the questions I have some of my mentor entrepreneurs that I make them go ask, what would you pay me for? So this is my service. This is what I do. This is what I want my business to do. And then asking potential clients of that business, what would you pay for and how much would you pay for that service? And I find that that's the number one question they come back and they said, I never even thought to ask it. I never even thought to ask potential clients what they would pay for. And what they find oftentimes is that their potential clients are willing to pay for something that they never even thought about. So it's really interesting to get the entrepreneur to do the exercise of just asking potential clients, you know, what do you find value in?
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty basic question.
Mm-hmm. Building a business is actually basic. A lot of the things that we learn in all of these conferences and entrepreneurial schools and all of that stuff, they're very basic concepts, but it's about the execution of those concepts. And it seems basic to ask somebody what they want, but a lot of entrepreneurs don't do it.
Yeah. So let's say you ask these questions and then you come up with your list, and let's say you have 10 different types of revenue. How do you decide which ones to test, how many to test at a time, and in what order?
So I usually sit down and I look at the likelihood of that revenue. So I do assign percentages to the likelihood. We're 80% likely to capture that type of revenue. We're 20% likely to capture that type of revenue. Maybe we don't have the right employees to capture that kind of revenue, but it's a big number. So maybe it's something we want to look for an employee or a partner to come in and if we feel like we should put effort into that. So I do look at the percentages of the likelihood of that revenue occurring and whether we'd be able to execute on it. And then I look at the ease of it. So I look at how easy was it to make that money? Is that something I've got to hire 25 people to do and I'm barely squeaking by on margin? Or is that something I hire one person to do, maybe spend $10,000 on technology and it makes money for itself? So I do look at the how the money is made as well now after 10 years of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
How can we execute on this and do a good job doing it, right? So those are questions that I ask myself. And then I always ask myself a goal. I'm a very goal-oriented person. So if I want to make $5 million in this company, I try to re-engineer how I can do that. I take the $5 million and I work through all the revenue sources. And can I do that with this company? And if that's what if I'm going to put my time, effort, and maybe even my investment dollars into something, I do the math and I figure out whether that's even possible. And if I don't believe that it's possible, I won't put my time, money, or effort into that endeavor if it doesn't work out. And I often find with entrepreneurs, when I ask them to write down the number of what they want to make, I've gone through several exercises where we've modeled the revenue and they want to make X amount of dollars. And it's almost an impossibility to ever hit that number. So if it's, and nothing's really impossible, but for them to be able to do it, it's a major stretch or a major investment or something that they really weren't prepared for or don't want to do. And then it really has them rethink whether this was a good idea. And I find that most people just don't do the math. There's math to this. If you want to make $1 million, you got to do the math. Can you make $1 million? If you're charging $10 a month, how many clients do you need to have to make $1 million? And that's simple math. Remember, we're talking about all these concepts are very simple, where 10 times how many clients equals $1 million. And people don't do the math.
So some solid market research and some good strategic thinking and planning based on simple concepts and simple math can go a long way.
Yes, I believe that.
So now I know that you have done a great job with Provident, and you've been involved in other businesses, and you mentor people. What might be one example of a great success that emerged from just doing this kind of simple analysis?
So I did have one mentoree that I was working with, and we did the math on their business model. And one of the things that ended up coming out was that they wanted to make $1 million. And when we worked through the math, it was a virtual impossibility to ever hit $1 million with their current model. And we were able, in the very first 30 days of just working with them on a mentor basis, able to get him to sit down and think through the model and pivot. And he did pivot. He came back with a completely different revenue model and added some services on there that could get him to $1 million. And now he's blown through that, and he's at $3.5 million after 2 years of doing this. But his first model, it just wouldn't have worked. And he even says, if I just hadn't asked the question, you know, can we get there? This is where you want to be. Is it even possible with your model? He says, you know, I probably would have just kept going down that road and spinning my wheels. I never would have hit $1 million under that current model. But just going home, and he came up with the idea. I didn't come up with it. He came up with the rework of the model. I didn't come up with it. He just didn't think to sit down and actually model whether it was his idea was even possible.
Yeah, that's a great example. And Teresa, where are you now in your own journey?
So I'm transitioning off of working at Provident, as I've sold my company, and now it's ready to move on to its next stage in corporate America. And I'm looking at a couple of startups. I'm looking at a couple of different ventures that are a little bit more grown up. I'm trying to decide whether I have the stomach to do a startup again, because as I do my own math, is that worth my time, effort, and even maybe my money investment to start all over again?
Great questions. Great questions. And any clues as to what it looks like at this point, or is it still too early to tell?
I still lean in financial service. And where I'm kind of leaning toward in where I might end up is I'm leaning toward things that I believe in my entrepreneurial career that kept me from really growing my business. And it always ends up in the accounting department. So over the last 10 years, when I think about what kept me and my partner from growing at that stage or doing something, I find that when it comes to accounting, we have so much technology nowadays, but yet still most entrepreneurs rely on one controller, maybe a team of two or three people, but those are large companies that have two or three. Most of us only have one controller, maybe a bookkeeper underneath them. And you put all of your effort, money, time, everything into what one person says you should do with your money. And I still find that I have a lot of passion around changing that, because I feel whenever I'm mentoring people, most entrepreneurs have no financial, I just happen to be an accountant, but most entrepreneurs, they're not. And what could they do with their businesses if they really could understand their numbers? And so I have a lot of passion around that. I'm kind of pursuing some possible opportunities down that path, but I would love to see entrepreneurs be more successful. And if they could control and understand their money, where it goes and where it comes from, I believe we are just going to build better entrepreneurs.
It sounds great. How can listeners learn more about you and get in touch with you?
So right now I'm still at Provident, so they can still go to trustprovident.com, and I'm still working in the self-directed IRA and alternative asset industry. So that's still how they can learn more about me.
Sounds great. Well, Teresa, thank you for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a great discussion, particularly focusing on recurring revenue and how to build that. So I really want to thank you for coming back and doing a deep dive in an area that's very challenging for people. My guest today has been Teresa Fetti, the president of Provident Trust Group. Thank you again, Teresa, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode, along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed what to ask your audience to find the best recurring revenue opportunities and how to build the business that will support your financial goals. Email me and let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Remember to subscribe on whatever platform you listen on and leave a review if you can. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.